The title of the talk is An Inconsistent Multiverse, and just not to raise wrong expectations, I will not show that the multiverse is inconsistent. Rather, the question is in how much multiverse views can incorporate something that is that we will call inconsistency toleration in set theory, and I will give you the background for this question. These are just the main points that we have. So we will start from this observation that since its introduction, like in the 1960s, forcing has deeply informed the mathematical practice of set theory. So we are again talking about practice here. The background hypothesis from which we will start is that through the extensive practice of forcing over this long time frame that we have had now, we have now a kind of a pluralistic landscape of set theoretic universes. And we're working with mutually inconsistent models as part of everyday set theoretic life, and we call this de facto inconsistency toleration. I will explain to you in more detail what this entails. And the main claim that we want to look at here is that different programs which emerged in the philosophy of set theory in the last years can be understood also in the following way. Namely, they formulate a variety of strategies to deal with set theoretic pluralism and inconsistency between models in particular. So for the structure of the talk, I will give you a little bit of the background, specifically the discussion in the philosophy of science where we come from in this talk. Then I will say something about inconsistency in set theory and what I mean by this. And then I will talk about strategies for this inconsistency toleration and give an outlook on how we can study multiverses in potentialist systems. Okay, so to the background, the motivation comes from the philosophy of science, and so I will go through this very quickly, but there have been for a long time kind of persistent rumors about contradictions that arise in sciences, like historical case studies. There are different ones. And then there is the claim that these cases have not been a threat to scientific rationality because the inferences were not explosive. And the debate that we have currently about inconsistency in sciences is kind of two-sided. So one side claims that embraces the claims that we have here, and they focus on inconsistency toleration mechanisms to explain claim two. So to explain why these kinds of inconsistencies have not been a threat to scientific rationality. And then there is the other side that rejects this claim one, and they focus on consistency preservation strategies. This is kind of the very rough picture that we have. And these inconsistencies can come up in different ways. So they can be internal to a theory, they can be mutual between theories, and they can be between theory and observation, for example. Normally, there are two contexts in which we have these inconsistencies. The first is theory pursuit. The second one is theory acceptance, and I will say something regarding this in the case of set theory. But first, I want to point out what we aim to do here. So we aim to add to this debate that we have in the philosophy of science by presenting the case of inconsistency between models in set theory as a good example of mutual inconsistency in set theoretic pursuit and acceptance. And we want to characterize three strategies of inconsistency toleration in the context of set theoretic acceptance. And I will say more to this. So inconsistency between models just means that we have two models that say kind of something that put together would be inconsistent, like a model of CH and a model of non-CH or something like that. So if we look at the historical development, we can put this in terms of this pursuit and acceptance thing that that I just gave you on the last slide. So we can say something like, at first we had the context of set theoretic pursuit, where forcing was mainly used as an independency proving tool. So we had forcing, and then a lot of these independency sentence were shown. And the new and also partly mutually inconsistent models that we had were not yet accepted and considered to be part of set theory, but they were simply tools to prove something, for example, independency or something like that. But then at a certain point, and this is connected to a claim to this hypothesis that I'm going to make in a second, is that these various mutually inconsistent models became object of research themselves. They became accepted as valid models of set theory in which interesting research is done. And Leon yesterday gave kind of some quotes on how you could phrase something like that. But I think one of the things that Hamkins is saying is like set theorists begin to live in these models and they begin to explore these models and like all of these kind of very natural sounding ways of dealing with the models of set theory that you have. And this is the point where we would say that something like inconsistency toleration comes in. So what is this when I talk about inconsistency? Again, we start from this observation that forcing has created this plurality of set theoretic models that we have. We now are going to kind of start from this hypothesis that we have this de facto inconsistency toleration, that the extensive use of forcing applies to a pluralistic multitude of universes where working with mutually inconsistent models is part of everyday set theoretic life. And let me just say that, of course, this is not kind of a given in general. This is a hypothesis, and it has to be investigated. And it kind of relates to some of the things that Deborah said, because if you want to investigate this, you have to investigate set theoretic practice. And then you have these problems of how do I really get to know what set theoretic practice is, and how can I get evidence or inferences from this. But for the purpose of this talk and of this paper, I will just let the hypothesis stay as given here. So the hypothesis that we will be starting from is that we have this kind of de facto inconsistency toleration, because otherwise we will just, I would have to give a different talk than I'm giving now. Okay, so of course you can say something about this from the universe view as well, but for time reasons, I will just constrict myself to the multiverse view. So this is a template of a very kind of broad way in which you could conceive something like the multiverse to be. It is just more or less a negation of what the universe view is. And of course, we know that there are very different kind of ways in which this can be framed in a certain sense, in which you can understand something like a multiverse. There are different versions of what a multiverse actually is, so what models are included, and so on and so forth. And again, for the purpose of this talk, I'm going to restrict myself to two different kind of kinds of multiverses. The one I will call the full multiverse, which is something like the multiverse program of Joel Hamkins, where we have kind of an abundance of models and we look at them all in the same way at all of these models. And then we have something like the compartmentalized multiverse, which partially compartmentalizes mutually inconsistent models. And an example for this would be the hyperuniverse program of Cy Friedman. And of course, this is not all of the multiverse views that there are. Some of the other ones can be kind of put into this context of A and B, but it's not meant to be exhaustive. It's just two kind of models that we want to look at. Okay, so look at the full multiverse in the context of the multiverse view of Hamkins. So he takes the world of forcing extensions, but also other extensions as well at face value. And what does this mean? It means that he claims that there is no absolute set theoretic background. There are many distinct concepts of set, and each instantiated by a forcing extension in a corresponding set theoretic universe. He said that each set theoretic universe is ontologically on a par with all the others. Let's just ignore the preferred part at the moment. And so I think he calls this higher order Platonism, or one can call it higher order Platonism. And then he says that the truth of the continuum hypothesis, for example, is settled over the multiverse view by the knowledge that we have on how the CH behaves over the whole multiverse. So one example for that would be, for example, that you can switch CH on and off with forcing or something like that. So this for him, in essence, is how the truth of an independent statement is settled over the multiverse view. Okay, so we know this, but in this talk, we want to look at how he kind of deals with these inconsistencies that come up. And of course, this multiverse provides a framework that explicitly includes these inconsistencies between models. And this is just because this is how he explains, for example, the truth of the continuum hypothesis. So he has to look at models that where CH is true and where CH is false to get kind of the picture of how the CH behaves over the multiverse. So it's kind of explicitly part of that. Then he claims that as all of the models are ontologically on a par, even the mutually inconsistent ones are. So this is another way of explicitly kind of putting this into. But what he also does in his multiverse is he kind of shifts the focus to study how these pluralities of models that we have are connected and how we may reach them from each other. So what are the connections between the models, and not so much kind of just looking at each model in particular and looking what is there, but part of this multiverse program is also kind of to get a more structural approach on how these models are connected with one another. Okay, in difference to that, the multiverse or the hyperuniverse that we have in Cy Friedman's conception is a little bit different. So what does he do? He kind of goes a different way. He's not so much kind of seeing something like the full multiverse where you have all of these models kind of on a par and then you're looking at structures over these models. But what he does is he wants to have kind of a good notion on how you can prefer some of the models in the multiverse. And he does this, for example, by using forcing and kind of the inconsistencies that we have to identify preferred models out of the current multiverse that we are looking at. And then he wants to extract generalized principles from these preferred models, which then again, these will be kind of higher order principles. And then again, he wants to formulate them in first order principles, which will give us some axioms and some ways in how in which we can extend set of C, for example. And this will lead to something that we call compartmentalization, in the sense that, so if you have these higher order principles and each of these higher order principles kind of gives you a way on which you can extend set of C, then you kind of get some of branches in the multiverse where each branch kind of corresponds to one of these higher order principles that you have. And he doesn't assume any Platonistic background in kind of in difference to the Hamkinsian multiverse that you have. And these branches that I talked about, they don't necessarily have to merge. So you can talk about how you can merge them, but kind of from the onset, it's not meant for them all to merge to something that kind of comes together in a certain sense. Okay, so here we have inconsistencies on a little bit different levels, because we can look at inconsistencies between models as we had before, but we can also look at inconsistencies between these kind of branches or compartments that we have in a multiverse. So they don't have to merge, so it can just be that the multiverse kind of behaves in a way that we have kind of a very strong branching behavior. And but what we have in a certain sense, we want to reduce inconsistencies between models in the sense like, so one of the things that should happen, so that is kind of on the onset, should happen is something like, I have a generalized principle, and this generalized principle tells me something about if a statement A should hold or not. And then in the branch that is given by this principle, we will just leave out all of the models where non-A holds, for example. So kind of in these branches, we reduce some inconsistencies, but of course not all, because inside of the branches, we can find some other inconsistencies between models as well. It will just not be the inconsistency that we started with, that gave us the generalized principle. And again, here we have a certain shift of focus that we have. So we have a shift of focus to study generalized principles that give rise to this kind of compartmentalization of the multiverse. Okay, so what strategies do we have in these two multiverse pictures that I've just given? So we will consider very quickly three philosophical strategies that we can have: the set concept, the algebraic, and the possible world strategy. The set concept strategy has the following idea. So models that are mutually inconsistent are in this way because they are instances of different concepts of sets that we have. The background is just that we can see the independency phenomenon as a kind of a view, as an evidence for vagueness in the concept of set. And the toleration now would come from the following: instead of looking like at a sentence A and non-A, and we say something like, oh, they are inconsistent because like it's A and non-A, they are just connected to different concepts of sets, and then we cannot kind of compare it in this way, and we don't have A and non-A, we have A according to one concept and non-A according to another concept, and that would give us a way to tolerate these inconsistencies. So in the whole in the hyperuniverse, for example, we could look at these higher order principles that we have to be kind of principles that tell us something new about a certain underlying set concept. So we could look at the branches that the multiverse, the hyperuniverse gives us, in the sense of each branch is corresponding to a certain set concept, and this is the way in which we kind of can tolerate inconsistencies here. Of course, this is not without problems, the strategy here. So there's always this question of how vague really is the concept of set. So there is a paper by Giorgio where he talks about something like this. So is the independency of the continuum hypothesis really enough to claim that, for example, the iterative concept of set is vague? And he would say no. Then there is an unclear correlation between set concepts and model of set theory. This is a paper by Neil, where he talks mostly about the Hemkinsian version of set concepts that he talks about in his multiverse paper. And then, of course, you can just ask kind of what do we do with inconsistencies that cannot be kind of mapped to these different concepts of sets? How does toleration then work in this sense? Okay, so this is the one strategy that we have connected to different set concepts. And then there is the algebraic strategy that says that set theory is simply changing from a theory that studies a specific structure to a formal theory that studies different structures. And here's this one of the many quotes that you could give by Joel, where he says something like this. So he says, "Why group theorists study group theory, ring theorists study rings, and topologists study topological spaces, set theorists study the models of set theory." So what he's actually doing, he's kind of drawing an analogy between like the development of algebra that you had, for example, when algebra changed to what is now modern or formal algebra. Or you could also draw analogies between set theory and the Euclidean non-Euclidean geometry case. So this is done frequently in the literature. What did happen now? Okay, sorry. So the idea here would simply be that we just regard models that are mutually inconsistent, so to speak, as two different structures, simply, and that's it, more or less. Like when you look at group theory, you have abelian groups and non-abelian groups, and this is not an inconsistency. I mean, it's just two different types of groups that you have. Okay, so there are problems with this as well. Specifically, there are problems if you really want to look at this analogies that you have between the geometry case and the algebraic case. So Hemkins is arguing, so there's this categoricity argument that goes against this analogy, and Hemkins is arguing against this. I don't want to go too deeply into this. You probably have heard of this. Then there is a counter argument, again by Giorgio in the same paper that I mentioned, about how you cannot really draw an analogy, for example, between the case of the continuum hypothesis and the parallel axiom with the Euclidean non-Euclidean geometry. So the question is, in how much does this work, or to what point does this work, this changing of set theory? And the last strategy that I want to look at is the possible work strategy, and this is something that kind of leads to the outlook that I want to give. So I could simply say I can tolerate this because I describe mutually inconsistent models in a different way, namely as possible worlds. You can find this. There is a paper by Joel Hemkins and Benedict Loeb about the modal logic of forcing. It's already kind of some years old, so like 10 years or something like that. So I guess most of the people know it. The main idea is that I can just describe the forcing multiverse that I get. So I have a model, I have all of the forcing extensions that I get, and I can describe this as a modal logical structure, so with a Kripke frame. And I can regard these forcing extensions in the way where I say something like possibly phi means like true in some forcing extensions, and necessarily phi means like true in all forcing extensions. If I do that, I get all the problems on the benefits that I get from the possible world discussion in philosophy. And unfortunately, I'm not as far as Chris is. I don't know enough about this to be dangerous. But Chris knows enough of this to be dangerous, so I will speak to you at some point about this. So this is one version that you could do, and this leads me to kind of this outlook that I want to give. I mean, we have heard a lot about potentialist strategies in the last time, and this is just kind of a different viewpoint on this strategy here. So you can regard set theory, I'm going to speak very quickly. You can just look at specific multiverses as potentialist systems in this way, and we have all seen how this works, like looking at a Kripke frame and so on and so forth. You can actually do this according to very different things. You can look at the class of set forcing extensions, the class of V kappa, where kappa is inaccessible, and so on and so forth. So there are different things. And then you look at the modal validities that you have in these systems. So they are discussed in these different papers. And what we have now is kind of we get different branching behaviors of these potentialist systems. And this is taken from the Hemkins paper. So in the end, these branching behaviors are connected to the modal validities that we have. And I want to take a look on this directed convergence, because if you look at the forcing multiverse, this is this will have a directed convergence. What it just means something like this. So even if I get something like two models kind of splitting apart, at some point I can just reconnect them. And this is the point two of the modal logical system that you have. So this is this possibly necessary phi follows necessarily possible phi. And you can show that this holds with forcing, because we can always get a product forcing that kind of puts these things together again. And so what we can look at, we can look at this branching behavior as something like, I kind of will never get a branch that kind of just goes outside of kind of a background structure that I'm looking at and never goes back. I can all catch this in this kind of background structure that he's calling N. And here you could talk about inconsistency toleration in the sense that you say inconsistency between models is not eliminated, because still you have all of these models that are mutually inconsistent. But it becomes kind of more of a localized phenomenon with respect to this background structure that you're looking at here. And now you get kind of a shift from kind of explaining inconsistency on the level of models, as we had in the strategies before that. So we wanted to kind of look at what these models tell us and how we can interpret them in a sense that allows us inconsistency toleration, to just conceiving this of relations between models as part of this overall directed structure that we're looking at. So it's kind of a shift of a viewpoint. And kind of the speculation that we have is that we could, that this kind of analysis that we get could be used as an indicator for the modal structure of the multiverses in order to provide a successful framework for inconsistency toleration. Thank you very much. Oh no, there's a conclusion. Oh God, okay. So the conclusion just states what I had like now. So we want to talk about this in the context of philosophy of science, and then we give these philosophical strategies. We say how we can find strategies for inconsistency toleration, and we give an outlook on the potentialist system. Sorry, I took much longer than I wanted to. Thank you.